God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I wish to remind you that whatever is said here at this meeting expresses our own individual experience as of today. We do not speak for AA as a whole, and you are free to agree or disagree with anything that is said here tonight. In fact, it's recommended that you pay no attention to anything that cannot be reconciled with what's in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't have a big book, it's time you bought one. Read it, study it, live with it. Follow the directions in it and learn what it means to be an AA member. And if you need a book, raise your hand. John will bring you one. I know our speaker goes straight out of it. Don't be shy. Now I'm lost. Hello, my name is Don Teal. I'm a very grateful. Some of you are looking for a sponsor. So will everyone who has taken our steps and been blessed with a spiritual awakening please stand up so those looking for guidance can see who they can entrust their lives to. If you see someone you want to help, you catch them after the meeting. That's so great to see. We're just glad we're all here, and we're all here because we're not all there.
Yeah.
All right, I'm not going to waste any time introducing our speaker. Most of you know who she is. This is the first speaker that I saw when I came to Primary Purpose. I was still a fried pie when I heard her speak, and I thought, what does my college professor have to say that even relates to me? Because she had her glasses on top of her head, and I was like, you know. And by the end of that meeting, I was like, she's in the right place, and I'm in the right place. Cindy, come on up.
Hi, everybody. My name is Cindy Murphy, and I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. And by the grace of a very loving God that I got connected to as a result of actually working these steps, guided by a committed sponsor who held me accountable to the work, I had my last drink 6 years ago to tomorrow. Okay? That's a miracle. That is truly a miracle. Because this is so humbling to sit here in front of a room full of people and I get to share my experience with these steps with you. I never thought that I would be standing in front of a group of people sharing anything with anybody about alcoholism, you know, because I was that person. I don't know if there are many people in this room, and I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands or anything like that, but if there's anybody in here who's had trouble staying sober and struggling with this program, we call people like that knuckleheads around here. Let me assure you that that was the case with me. I was just as bad as anyone could ever be. I had the hardest time with this deal. And that's why I've spent the last two weeks, talking so much about steps 1, 2, and 3. The first week I talked a lot about my story, which is step 1. It was a long, tedious process for me. Last week, step 2 and 3 are very quick steps. We don't have to spend very much time on those, but I did. We stayed in We Agnostics for quite some time. And the reason for that is that it's preparation, it's groundwork for the rest of the steps. Because for people like me and for people like most of you, we have to be willing to set our egos aside to get on with the rest of the steps. And if you've thoroughly taken step 1, you're ready to do that. The biggest obstacle to success in this program, I believe, is that, you know, we get here all beaten up and we're ready to go to any lengths. But as we go down the road a little ways and start feeling better, our ego raises its ugly head. And suddenly we're feeling better. And don't you know who I am? You know? I hear myself sometimes saying when my sponsor's telling me to do something on the phone and I'm thinking, don't you understand, I'm 56 years old and I think I know how to handle this. And that's bad news when I'm thinking that, you know. Mm-mm. Now I'm in trouble, right? That's my ego rearing its ugly head again. And that's what gets in the way because now I'm no longer teachable. Humility's out the door and I'm ready to take control again. And that's bad news for someone like me. That's really bad news. So anyway, we're going to go on with step 3 tonight. First, just quickly reviewing, just in case there's someone new here tonight. Step 1, we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. What that means, for those of you who don't know, I'm powerless over alcohol because I have an allergy to alcohol. My body can no longer metabolize alcohol. I will never drink successfully again. And the reason for that is that I have this allergy. If my body ingests alcohol in any form whatsoever, I have an abnormal or allergic reaction to alcohol, and it produces an immediate craving for more. I want more. That's my abnormal reaction to alcohol. And so I'm going to drink a lot of it. I'm going to drink it until I pass out, throw up, die, get thrown in jail, whatever the deal happens to be. I will never be able to drink successfully again. That's what happens when I drink alcohol. If that was all there was to it, I would just quit drinking. You know, just don't drink anymore. That's a bad problem for you. That's the thing I tried to do when I was 15 years old. I said, you know what, alcohol's bad news for me. I'm going to quit drinking. The second part of the problem, which is that my life has become unmanageable, is that I'm not able to manage that decision. Every time I tried to quit drinking, sooner or later, and usually it was sooner, I would decide it was okay to drink again. My mind could talk me right back into that first drink again. No matter what my experience had been, my mind would say, you know what, it wasn't that bad. This time I've got a new idea. This time, you know what, I will just stay locked up in my house. This time I'll just buy a little bottle. This time I'll switch to you fill in the blank, you know? And then I would trigger the allergy, and then it would be off to the races again. And I did this for decades, you know? And I never learned from that experience. It's the subtle insanity of the first drink. And that's the reason I'm an alcoholic. Those two things have to be in place. Finally, 6 years ago, when I got face to face with a woman who had had a spiritual awakening, had worked the steps, she'd been sober for a long time. She asked if I was willing to go to any lengths. She asked if I believed it had worked for her. I said yes. So I believed it had worked for her, so now I've taken step two. I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. It didn't matter what that power was. I just believed that it might be possible for me. And that's step two. Step three, made a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God as I understood it. That's just simply a decision to go on with the rest of the steps. When I was in AA before, and we would be in step three meetings, we would focus on what our concept of God was every time we'd get to a step three meeting. What do you think God is? And everybody would go around the room and get their concept of God. We never paid attention to the first part, made a decision. The decision's the key part of that thing. We don't know what God is, you know. That really doesn't matter. What matters is the decision to go on with the rest of the steps. As we work the steps, we might start developing some sort of concept. But right now at step three, the key part is to work the steps, because at step 12 it's going to say, having had a spiritual awakening is the result of these steps. So I don't need to worry about what my spiritual awakening is going to look like at this point. I don't need to worry about what my concept of God is at this point. I just need to get busy with the rest of the steps. And then we say this beautiful step three prayer. And the step three prayer that we did not read last week, it says, the most important thing about this prayer is that we voice it without reservation. That's the key part, is that we're going to voice it without reservation. So we really need to consider what we're saying here. And what we're going to say is, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. So we're going to let God kind of run the show. I don't know how to let God run the show. Everybody gets so funky about this. We go, I don't know how to turn my will and life over to the care of God. I know, neither do I. We don't know how to do that. We're just willing. We're just saying, here, to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. I want to be relieved of the bondage of self so that I can be of service to God. I don't want to be relieved of the bondage of self so that everybody will admire me. You know, so they'll say, oh, what an unselfish person you are. I want to be of service, not to be more attractive. You know, we all want to be more attractive and be less selfish. But no, that's not the purpose. The purpose is to put it into action, to be of service. Take away my difficulties that victory over them, alcoholism, right, will bear witness to those that I would help with thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready. that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. Abandoning myself utterly to God is a lot of abandon. You know? It's a whole lot of abandon. And I don't really know how to do that. I don't know how to muster that up. I don't know. And that's okay. What that means is I'm willing to finally follow some directions. If my sponsor says, I want you to call me tomorrow, I call her tomorrow. I'm not going to rely on my own ideas about these things. You know? I realize I'm a grown woman. I have some basic intelligence about things. But I'm going to be willing to follow some basic instructions. I'm not going to rely on my own intelligence with everything. Because my own intelligence got me a front row seat at AA. You know? I might be smart in some departments, but come on. It's not that I'm smart that I'm still alive. I should be dead. You know? It's just luck that I'm not dead. So whatever smartness I have up to this point really hadn't served me that well. I've been on a mission to kill myself, right? So it's time to start following some directions, to get some humility, so that I can learn how to abandon myself utterly. And if I'm not willing to follow her directions, I need to find a different sponsor or go drink some more. It's real simple. It's real simple. I heard somebody say before the meeting that primary purpose was hardcore. Well, and then I heard someone else say, well, that's because the disease is hardcore. You bet it is. You bet it is. I was talking with my sponsor this week, and she said, Cindy, this is a deadly disease. If I see you going out toward the edge of a cliff, you better believe I'm going to yell at you to come back. Right? This is a deadly, deadly disease. Okay. So then down at the bottom of the page, it says, next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action. So next, we're going to launch out on a course of vigorous action. When do we take the fourth step? Next. Right? Oh, we're going to sit and think about it? I love it when I remember in meetings, gosh, I'm really an expert on middle of the road AA because I was in it for decades, I'm telling you. And we would say, oh, I'm working on the third step. I'm thinking about it. I've been there. Yeah. The first step of which is a personal house cleaning. Okay, and it says, though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Now we're going to start getting a hint about this stuff. Our liquor was but a symptom. See, I thought alcohol was my problem. And now we're starting to hear, no, alcohol is just a symptom of what's wrong with you. We're going to start seeing that alcohol is only a symptom. And now what's really wrong with you are the things that have been blocking you from this power. Because back in We Agnostics, it said lack of power was our dilemma, right? So things have been blocking me from this power and manifesting itself in selfishness, which is the root of my problem. So, and this is all getting real weird to me at this point, you know? Because I'm going, well, I believe you, Dara, but that's just too weird because I really think alcohol's my problem, right? But I'm going to go with it. I'm just going to go with it and go with the flow because, remember, I'm setting my brain aside for a while. I'm just going to go with the flow on this thing, and I'll accept what you're saying. So now we're going to take a personal inventory. Step four, I think, is one of the most misunderstood things in the world in AA. We are not junior therapists, right? None of us is a therapist. So step four is not about anything therapy. It's an inventory. We're just making lists here. We're not getting into any kind of psychological ooh-woo-woo-woo thing. Because none of us are qualified to do that. We don't know anything about that stuff. We're just making an inventory. And what we're trying to do is find out what's been blocking us from this power. And what's been blocking us are these grosser handicaps that later on we find out are selfishness, dishonesty, self-centeredness, fear, inconsideration, that stuff. But most of us don't recognize those things in ourselves. Just like I told you last week, I didn't believe I was selfish, you know? Well, So because we can't really readily recognize these things in ourselves, we're going to start with things that we do know. And we do know what we resent. We do know who we're angry with, right? So we're going to start with a list of our resentments, and we're just going to list those things. It says this is just a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about our stock and trade, right? We don't want to fool ourselves about values. There was a time in my life when the most terrifying thing would have been to tell me that we're going to face the truth about me. Wasn't that scary to you? I did not want to really face the truth about me. I would rather do anything but that. And today, that is not scary at all to me. Today, that's a great freedom. But for the new person, that's a very terrifying thing to say we're going to look at the truth about you. But we're going to start with things that are not that terrifying. We're going to start with what you resent, what you're angry about. It says that resentment is the number one offender. Really. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we've been not only mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. Now we're going to introduce that concept of the spiritual malady. We've not introduced it up until step four. No mention in this book has been made of the spiritual malady till now. Okay? And I'm here to tell you that alcoholics do not have a corner on the spiritual malady. Everybody can suffer from the spiritual malady. That's not what makes us different from other people. What makes us different from other people is the mental obsession and the bodily allergy, right? But now we're going to start talking about this spiritual malady. And he tells us that when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So what he's telling us is that this program is designed to help us with the spiritual malady, so then we straighten out mentally. The mental obsession will be removed, and we'll straighten out physically because then we don't have to worry about the allergy. Right? Okay. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We list people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. All right, so we're going to go down and we're going to list who we're angry with. And on page 65, you can see this very clearly. And I just love to point this out to people because when I was in other AA groups and other places and other times, a fourth step like was a novel, you know? You needed a word processor, you know? That was before personal computers, but you really did. You needed like this huge thing because it was a novel. This doesn't look like a novel to me. This is a list. It's truly just an inventory. And the first column we're going to put who we were resentful at. And then he tells us, then we're going to ask ourselves why we were angry. Then we're going to list the cause. So after we've completed listing the first column, then we're going to go to the second column and list the cause. And then we're going to go to the third column, and we're going to list what it affects. We have an inventory sheet. I did bring one this time that looks kind of like this. And those of you who are members of our group have seen this. This was designed by Joe McHugh. And it's a great thing. I remember hearing people in the past say, no, you've got to write all these words out or it doesn't count. Why? I mean, why does that matter to write out self-esteem? This is an inventory. It's a fact-finding, fact-facing process. It's not a punishment, you know? So now we're going to look at the third column and see how it affects me, see how these things affect me. And I promise you, when I was in AA before, I never saw the value of this third column. I never got what does that have to do with anything? When we get to the fifth step, we'll talk about that. So then we check, go through that column and see what it affects, right? And then we get to the fourth column and we see what our part is. Some people say we don't have a fourth column, but look, on page 66, it says, we turn back to the list, to the bottom of 66, we turn back to the list where it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God... Let's keep going. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each one. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs and honestly were willing to set these matters straight. That's the fourth column. We're going to look to see what our part was in this. So that's how we do our resentments. Next, we do fears. And we're going to do fears basically the same way. I love what he calls fears. He says, notice that the word fear, and we have another sheet for fears that's very similar to this. Notice that the word fear is bracketed along the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. Fear is an evil and corroding thread. Fear is a terrible thing for us. It sets into, let's read it. It sets in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Why do we have our fears? Where do these fears come from? And now we say, we ask ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Every fear I have is because self-reliance might fail me. Every fear. Because I cannot rely on myself to solve the problem. Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Perhaps there is a better way, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be at once we commence to outgrow fear. And that's the fear prayer. So we treat fears the same way we do resentments, and we've got the list there. So now we've completed our fear inventory. We list all of our fears, and we treat them the same way we do the resentments. And we have this fear prayer. The third inventory that we're going to do is our sex inventory. Many of us need an overhauling there. You know, I always thought back in the day that the sex inventory was you list everything naughty you did sexually. That's what I thought. And that's not it at all. We're going to list our sexual misconduct, who we've harmed as the result of our sexual misconduct. So I may have harmed any of you women, because I might have flirted with your husband at a party. If you were at a party in the 80s or 90s or 70s, I am quite sure I flirted with your husband. Particularly in the 70s. Okay. That's the kind of thing we're looking for, is how we've misused our sexual powers to harm others. We're looking at that more. Okay. And it says that it's easy to get off track, that some people, well, let's just read what it says. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think that we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. I love this statement. We want to stay out of this controversy. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. Hallelujah. Now I know I'm not in church. What a great relief. Because all my life I've been, you know, feeling guilty about everything. Right? And now I'm not, it's not about that. It's no longer about that. It's about something much more important than that. It says we all have sex problems. That's another thing that was a great relief to me. Every one of us has sex problems. I'm talking to you. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Here's the question. Where have we been selfish? Where am I? Dishonest or inconsiderate? Where had we not? It was a brand new experience for me when I got sober to learn to be unselfish in a relationship. Because when I started looking carefully at it, I realized I'd been selfish my entire life. Everything about me had been selfish. And to start looking at relationships in an unselfish way was a brand new thing. It's quite challenging, isn't it? Where it had been dishonest and inconsiderate. Oh my gosh. It's second nature to be inconsiderate. We're all about, am I getting my needs met? Right? Am I the only one? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? I mean, this could be a really long inventory. Right? We got this all, I mean, because we're not talking about all those lost weekends. That's what I thought we were talking about. We're talking about relationships and how we've treated people. How we've treated people we claim to love. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? Busted. We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, neither to be despised or loathed. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we've done harm, providing that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. Sex is not its own little category. Sex is just one more way that we're supposed to be decent people, you know, that we're supposed to be unselfish, loving, good people. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. And that's our second prayer. The first one was we ask God to mold our ideals and help us to live up with them. Okay, God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with other persons is often desirable. And that's really true. It's really true. Especially in early sobriety. Don't bypass your sponsor. Don't leave your sponsor in the dark about these things. Don't grab onto that notion that God alone can judge your sex conduct and that sort of thing. Because nothing takes us back to booze faster than a relationship. I mean, as my sponsor says, that man is a bottle of vodka. And she's right. I mean, that's the truth. It is the truth, because we don't know what we're doing in that area. We're not here to say you can't have relationships, and we're not here to deny you the right to have a relationship. Nobody is. Everybody wants you to have relationships. But we've got to establish a relationship with a higher power first. And one thing I know is we women want men to be our higher power first. That's just the long and the short of it. We'll make a man our higher power first every time. I used to get up every morning and look over at my husband and say, what kind of day are we going to have? What kind of mood are you in? Oh, we'll be happy today. And he wasn't asking me to be that way. He didn't want me to make him his higher power. That's just what I did. And the freedom is learning how to make God first. And that's what men want us to do. They don't want us to make him their higher power. That's a big responsibility, isn't it, guys? You don't want that. Most of you don't. Like you've worked the steps. All right. Okay. So that's what we're going to do with our inventory. All right. It says, if you've been thorough about our personal inventory, if we've been thorough about our personal inventory, we've written a lot down. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could do for ourselves. We hope that you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will is blocked from you. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you've made a good beginning. That being so, you've swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. But that's just the beginning now, isn't it? Now we have to go to a chapter called Into Action. Having made our personal inventory, what are we going to do about it? Solitary self-appraisal is not sufficient now, isn't it? It says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which when completed will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. I didn't go into a lot of detail about the fourth step, as you noticed, when we were doing it. Just because I didn't go into a lot of detail when I was doing my fourth step. The fifth step is where the magic took place for me. I needed God and another human being for me to really see the truth about me. And those of you who've done a fifth step, I believe that's probably been your truth too. To really see the truth about ourselves, right? Because solitary self-appraisal is insufficient. Given very much time for me to cruise through who I'm angry at and why, if I look at it long enough, I can really justify why I hate you, right? Give me very much time to think about it, and I can just really, really nail it on the head and just go on and on and on. I need a sponsor who helps me get through to the truth, you know, to the real truth about things. As it says, that we're going to have to learn some humility and fearlessness and honesty, and that we will find it necessary until they tell someone else their whole life story. The whole life story is the real truth about why I'm angry with people. Okay? Not just the surface stuff of what you did to me. Okay. We're going to be entirely honest with somebody else. And now we're going to pocket our pride and go to it. Now, I'm going to give you one example. And the reason I'm going to give you this example is that this was one... It's a little bit embarrassing because it's kind of... silly, but my sponsor loves this story about me, and I had a hard time seeing the truth about my selfishness and dishonesty. And I'm going to share it with you because it might help you in helping others. I had a big resentment when I did my inventory. At the time when I came into the program this time, I was teaching school. And I was teaching learning different children. I was teaching dyslexic, ADD children, hyperactive, in a school that went K through 12. And I was teaching fifth graders. And it was an open classroom situation, and there were two of us, two teachers with 16 children. And I had eight children, and she had eight children, for the most part. But sometimes she would teach all 16, and I would assist her. Or sometimes I would teach all 16, and she would assist me. And sometimes we'd break up into little groups, that kind of thing, right? And these kids are ADD, so naturally when I'm teaching my little eight, and she's teaching her little eight, if they did something cute and fun over here, my kids would always look over there, right? You know, because they're ADD and they can't really focus. And this is what I'm telling Dara. And so in a teacher's meeting one day, I thought, you know what? Our room is shaped in such a way that it would be really great if we had a wall down the middle of the room. I thought it was a brilliant idea. And the head of the school said, well, we can't really afford to do that. And I said, well, okay. So I got funding, and I also got the janitors to volunteer to build a wall, and the head of the school wouldn't let me build a wall. So I was really, really pissed off. And so that was my resentment. And Dara said, so what are you going to do, like make it a portable wall that you can carry around with you everywhere you go? So that any time people are getting your way, you can just put this wall up? See, Dara knew what my real motive was. My real motive was I wanted to be queen of my own classroom. I didn't want to share the stage, you see? That's the wall story. Okay. Dara laughed louder. I think you guys see my point of view more. Because it made sense to me. But the truth, that really was the truth. I really did want to be queen in my own classroom. I didn't want to share the stage with this other teacher. I wanted to pull my little eight kids and just have them watching me all day. All right. So I was angry at the head of the school. I was mad because she wouldn't let me build my wall. And this affected my self-esteem because didn't she understand? Because I'd gone public, you know, and gotten funding from parents and all this sort of stuff. It affected personal relations. It affected. I don't know if it affected security instincts that much, but it kind of did. No sex instincts, but it affected my ambitions, my social ambitions and security ambitions, because it was embarrassing because she said no after I'd gotten funding and people volunteered to build it and. You know, it was going to be a done deal. Was I selfish? Absolutely. I was dishonest because I was dishonest about my own motives. And that's the dishonesty that I carried throughout my life. I was always dishonest about my own motives. I always wanted you to think that I was doing it for wonderful, generous reasons. I'm only thinking of you. I am so concerned about these attention deficit disordered children. Right? They need to not have distractions. But really, I'm concerned about me being the queen of the room. And that was kind of the story of me. I always wanted to be the center of attention. Okay. And it was inconsiderate because other teachers who might want to have walls in their classroom couldn't have them. So that's where I was at fault. What I got also from this, I began to get a lot of freedom as a result of this fifth step because I started seeing where I was at fault in so many things. I shared with you guys that there was sexual abuse in my life when I was a little girl. Of course, I had no part in that when I was a child. Absolutely no part whatsoever. But that had happened when I was a little tiny girl. And as an adult, I was still holding that situation hostage and accountable and that man responsible for every failure I'd ever had in my life. So I no longer am accountable for being successful. After all, it's his fault that I'm a failure today. And that happened like 40 years ago. So that's dishonest, because that's no longer happening to me. It's time for me to take a responsibility for my life now. Right? So those are the kind of things that I started getting clarity about, you know? It's time to move on with my life and for me to become accountable for my life and not blame other people. But that doesn't mean that that wasn't an awful thing to have happened. Don't get me wrong. I'm not minimizing the impact of that event. I'm just saying that I no longer am going to hold that situation hostage and say, well, now I can no longer have fun. I got to be miserable the rest of my life because of this. That was a great freedom for me. Bad things have happened to my children in life, and that was a huge resentment that I've had, different things that had happened to my kids along the way. And I began to see that I couldn't play God in their lives, you know, that they had to, that was their path. And they had to take accountability for their own lives, just as I have to take accountability for my life. You know, and that it's part of God's plan for my life to have certain things happen, and it's part of God's plan for their lives. These were all things that gave me huge freedom. I also, another thing that was very powerful for me as a result of this step was understanding that third column. All these things, these basic instincts, the social instincts, security, sex, and ambitions, all those basic instincts that would get hammered as the result of a resentment or a fear or a sexual misconduct. When those things got hammered, what would happen to me is that I'm looking to you to meet my needs. Right? Like, I would get resentful if a boyfriend flirted with another girl, right? Real resentful about that, right? Don't like that. Well, I can't look to him to meet all my needs. I have to trust God. I have to know that I'm okay no matter what. It's not up to you to make me whole. I have to lean into God to meet my needs. In this time of economy, when money is all crazy, you know, we have to depend upon our real source of power. And I can't have all of my eggs tied up in people and hoping that they meet my needs, or then I'm going to get into fear and resentment. Those third column needs are so critical, because that's where I have to learn to depend upon God rather than people. Because anytime these instincts get rattled, then my character defects get triggered, right? So this became a wonderful little map to show me how I acted, you know? And it's a wonderful little design to see how these things get triggered. And that I don't have to be this kind of person. I still am. I still do these things, but I have a way out now. But I don't want to depend upon other people to make me happy. It's not your job. I always thought it was your job. And I really, you know, for you girls, and maybe guys too, we depend upon our spouses so much. We plug into them so much to make us complete, to make us happy. I remember my mother, when I was growing up, I'd say, how do you know who you marry? And she used to always say, marry someone who makes you happy. Right? Well, do you make me happy? You got to make me happy. It's not their job to make me happy. It's not. It's just not. We share a life together. And I need to consider how I'm helping him, what I'm doing for him, which is part of the amends process for me. We'll get into that in a second, I hope. Anyway, this has been my experience with the fourth and fifth step, and it's been a real eye-opener. That's step five. Also in step five, I found out, really critical, I found out that I've been using people all my life, and I never thought I used anybody. I thought you used me. And it was a big eye-opener to realize how much I used other people. I used other people because I didn't want to be alone. I just didn't want to be alone. And that was a huge eye-opener. Looking to other people to meet my needs. And only God can meet those needs. All right. So, after we finish that fifth step, what do we do next?
We go home for an hour. Sorry. Returning home, we find this is on 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. So this is not to be missed. We thank him from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we will walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? So what's objectionable? I'm selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate. Yes, I'm willing to let God remove all these things. If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask him to help us be willing. So that's a prayer. When we are ready, we do the 7th step prayer. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step 7. And that's the completion also of the 3rd step prayer. So now we need more action. We're going to make a list of all the people we've harmed. We have that list. We have it from our 4th step. All those people on our 4th step, we're going to have that. We're also going to add names to it, because there may be people we've harmed that we didn't resent, that are not in connection with any resentments or fears or sexual misconduct. In our group, we do a really clever thing, I think. We make a list of people that we would make amends to immediately. We call that now. Then later, and then maybe, and then never. And this sort of helps us to group the amends so that it's more doable. And then it says, if we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So we're going to start to make our amends. The amends process is for a lifetime. But I can immediately begin making some of the amends. And what I did is I immediately began making amends to people who were in town, who lived near me. And that's exactly what I did. And I started with family members. And I started with people who lived in my town. And it was a very amazing experience. Of course, I started, like most of you, with family members. And the book gives us precise directions on how to do all kinds of amends. I'm not going to go into all those tonight, but you will do that with your with your sponsor. She or he can give you precise directions and show you in the book how to do it. But I have to just share with you what's been the most wonderful experience for me, and that's been with my family. I was selfish and dishonest with my family, and I sat down with them and frankly analyzed the past with each one of them. And, of course, what the family always says, well, we're just so proud of you, Cindy. Just keep doing what you're doing, and we just want you to keep doing what you're doing, Mom. And you would think that would be an easy amend. The truth of the matter is my sponsor really holds me accountable to that one. And what I do is that I keep them utmost in my prayers every day. How can I be tolerant and loving and kind, just as the book says? Because as the book says in here, we're like tornadoes roaring through the lives of these people, right? And hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead. I can't tell you how, I don't even begin to understand how I hurt the people in my life over all these many years, how I frightened them. How terrifying it must have been for them. And I have wonderful people in my family. They're really decent, good people. We think of a man as unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. And that's the truth. But I also tell you that I don't have a perfect family, you know, by any means. They're all cute, but they're far from perfect. So we have times, you know, when we're not in agreement about things.
It says there's a long period of reconstruction ahead and we must take the lead. So we did sit down and frankly analyze the past. And it's very important that I not criticize them. There are things, believe it or not, that my saintly husband does that are not perfect. Okay? There are things he does that I don't like. But I don't get to criticize him. And I don't. I really, really try my very best not to. Because let me tell you what, he put up with a whole lot from me. A whole lot from me. And I've ceased fighting anything or anyone. It says their defects may be glaring, but the chances are our own actions are partly responsible. So I must clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. That doesn't mean that I never get angry with them, but I always make amends for it. Because it's not my job to straighten him out. It's just not. It's not my job to be on his back about anything. Not because he's perfect. No. But I have ceased fighting anything or anyone. And let me tell you something. He doesn't ever get in my way for what I have to do for my sobriety. He supports me 100%. The only time he's ever been outdone with me about this is if I have to be across town in rush hour traffic on a Friday afternoon to speak. And you know what he does? He rushes home from work so I don't have to drive. And he takes me. That's a special man. So when he's doing things that I don't particularly like, and believe me, they're annoying, you wouldn't like it either. I don't have to call him on it. And I'm very grateful that this wonderful man is in my life. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. We have to live it. And I don't talk incessantly about spiritual matters. He and I approach the spiritual life from different points of view. Very, very different points of view. And that's okay. And I don't tell him how to do his programming. He doesn't like that thing about powerlessness. We see it very differently. We see things very differently. But we don't argue about those things. He has his deal and I have mine. And I'm just so grateful he's in my life. As you can tell, I love him a lot. But anyway, that's how I make amends to him. The other amends have come real beautifully. The other thing I want to say about amends, there have been people that I've had trouble finding who have just shown up out of the blue. And I know a lot of you have had that experience too. My first sponsor in AA, I couldn't find her anywhere. And I ran into her at Tom Thumb, and she lives now like a few blocks from me. And I thought she'd moved to California. And there she was at Tom Thumb, and I could make amends to her right in the grocery store. There have been several miraculous things like that. At first, I thought amends were going to be so humiliating and terrifying, and now they're so empowering. There's something so empowering about going to someone and say, you know what? I have been so selfish in my relationship with you. What can I do to make it right? Because we begin to sense the flow of God's Spirit through us. It's an experience you do not want to miss. Anyway, next week we will go to 10, 11, and 12. I love you all very much, and thank you for letting me be with you tonight.
Thank you, Cindy. That was awesome. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. That's the big book, page 164. It is the practice of the Primary Purpose Group to offer a desire chip to anyone wishing to start their journey to sobriety. Taking this chip indicates a desire to stop drinking for good and all, but we don't drink just one day at a time. Does anyone want to begin that journey? Everybody good tonight? All right. If you would like to make the primary purpose group your home group, take one of the white cards from the basket when it comes around. If you're already a member and you have had a change in your address, phone number, or sobriety date, take a card and update the information. Return it to me. Our seventh tradition states that each group ought to be self-supporting through our own contributions. If this is your first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, we ask that you be our guest. We're glad that you're here and hope you will come back and be a part of our lives. Okay, we've got some announcements. Our regularly scheduled meetings are Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, all at 7:30 p.m. Tuesday and Thursday are open big book study and a foundation meeting. Saturday is a step speaker, except the first Saturday on even-numbered months. AA birthdays are celebrated. Al-Anon meets Tuesday and Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Their meetings are step studies using the big book. January 26th will be the 21st anniversary of the founding of our group. It will be celebrated on Saturday, January 31st. Details are on the board. Our step speaker this month is Cindy Murphy. February 7th, December, and January AA birthdays will be celebrated. If you want to celebrate, be sure your name and sobriety date are on the list posted on the bulletin board. Please visit our website at ppgaadallas.org. We have links to speakers, AA history, our big book study guide, and other awesome information about the solution. Please pass this link along to others. We have big books and study guides available for purchase after the meeting. One of our members will be in or near the closet on the stage here to help you out with that. Please sign out any of the many red big books before taking any for 12-step work. If you'd like to become a member of this group, you need to be convinced that you have a drinking problem. If your main problem is drugs or narcotics, CA, DA, HA, or one of several other fellowships is where you will find your solution. But everyone is welcome to our open meetings, and we invite you to come study with us. Several new big book study groups have been or are being formed in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Check the bulletin board for time and place. Please help us with the setup and breakdown of our meeting. Padded chairs go on one rack, metal seats on the other. And I believe both racks are in the back of the room. To cigarette smokers, please continue to be responsible for disposing of your cigarette butts in the provided cans. This keeps for friendly relations with the church, and that goes for all church grounds. Don't throw them down in the parking lot or on the grass or in the playground or anything like that. Are there any other announcements? All right. If we'll circle up, we'll close in the usual fashion.